Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 18th of May, recording at 9:09 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset groups, and I, of course, always start with a quick review of what's actually happened during the week. And although I've been away for 2 days of the week, I, of course, had a chance to look at the charts. And starting with global stock markets, first, a lot of them have been in small, tight ranges recently, including China, and they remain very steady within those ranges. Moreover, markets that had been underperforming for quite some time and are not at all overextended relative to their moving averages, such as India, have really been quite firm, and we've seen Thailand edging higher as well. In Europe, some of these markets had ranged sideways. I was just looking at the DAX a moment ago, and a number have a similar pattern, where the DAX had been going sideways in a narrow range for 12 days. That helped with a little bit of mean reversion in terms of the 200-day moving average, but many of these indices broke decisively upwards here today, including the DAX. So that may be all the consolidation we get, and certainly the overall upward trends are alive and well. I was kind of hoping that we might see a little bit more ranging sideways just to prevent some of the overextensions that we had seen, because if markets get too overextended relative to their moving averages, then that does set them up for a bigger, sharper setback than would otherwise occur. But the markets are going to do what they're going to do, and it's my job to comment on them and try to anticipate the developments that are actually going to take place. Now, Wall Street, good day in here, closing out near the highs. The Dow's up almost 80 points, 10 on the NASDAQ, I beg your pardon, 10 on the S&P and 19 on the NASDAQ Composite. So this is very steady action here as well. And so to conclude on global stock markets where I began, over the last week, the global uptrend is certainly alive and well despite a lot of concerns, and perhaps that's one reason why it is alive and well, and not everyone is long and leveraged in these markets. The worst that can be said in the short term is this overextension by some, but not all, stock market indices. Government bonds, different story there. The Bunds have been extending their downward move. That's Bund prices. UK gilts followed that downward break. The US contracts have been easing as well. So this is a generally soft sector here overall, but it's not falling fast enough, or yields aren't rising fast enough to alarm central banks at this stage. But the long-term scope for these, well, I was going to cover the week here, so I'll continue with that. The US dollar has been rallying all week, but slightly easier in here today. The US dollar index, though, is still above the 82 level, down 150 ticks in here as I speak. Precious metals, which have had a soft performance this week, particularly the silver market, followed by gold. Platinum has been somewhat steadier, but it eased as well, and as did palladium. But palladium started to steady earlier in the week, having come down earlier, and is firmer in here today, so that's picking up. They're all firmer in here today, incidentally. Silver on the July contract is back above $13 just, and gold, as I speak, gold bullion is up $4 after that little bit of a setback. These moves on the upside are not decisive, So it's would be premature to say that these precious metals are out of these little short-term downtrends, but they are oversold. And moving on to the industrial metals, which had been weak, I believe, over the last couple of days, but very strong in here today. And nickel, which has been the strongest of the strong, is back above the $50,000 level on the LME 3-month price. That's at 50,400 here today, up $1,600. And the cash price was up $1,800. I think it's over 54,000. So still a very tight market there, causing that big backwardation overall, but they were all higher. Soft commodities mixed, as is so often the case in here, no big moves that I can see. I'm here today. Okay. So what's going on here overall, and where are we heading? Well, I gave a little bit more than a review of the week and talking about stock markets a few minutes ago. And I would just reiterate, though, that the global upward trends, where they exist, and they exist for the vast majority of markets, remain very much intact. They are slightly overextended in a number of instances, very overextended for China and a few of the smaller emerging markets, such as Peru. That's been the case really for quite some time. The risk, as I see it, is certainly not of a bear market, probably not of a significant medium-term correction. Because that would be unusual coming that quickly on the heels of that late February, early March downward correction. But there is a risk that, as I've said all along, that we could see longer reaction phases, ranging reaction phases, I should say. I do not expect another mini meltdown, as you know. If that outlook were to change dramatically in the short term, I would assume that that would be because China really did react down quite sharply, as is a risk given the upward acceleration. What we do know about acceleration and discussed endlessly during the chart seminar is that it is a trend-ending signal of an unspecified duration. So does China get a little pause and then start moving upwards again? Well, it might well do that because it does remain very, very steady. We haven't had any downward dynamics in here of consequence recently. We had the B-share index move down sharply earlier in the week, but when you look at it on the weekly chart, that's the Shanghai B-share index, it's very firm. Because it then rallied yesterday and it rallied again here today, closing up near the highs. So it's well within the bounds of possibilities that China does move higher before we get a meaningful shakeout right now. But overall, the main risk that I see for most world stock markets is that they get some mean reversion towards those rising 200-day moving averages. And it does look to me as if we remain set for a reasonably good year in line with that third year of the U.S. presidential cycle, which is the most bullish historically, as you've heard me say on many, many occasions. Now, in terms of overall sector performance or national performance, the Asian markets are very strong. Pretty well all of the emerging markets are performing. The emerging markets are, for the most part, outperforming the developed country markets. Where that's not the case, it's with resources plays such as Australia and Canada, which have done exceptionally well. So has South Africa for quite a considerable time, although it's softened a little bit here recently in a ranging phase. And again, another developed country, largely agricultural product market, New Zealand, had a big breakout on the upside here today and has broken up out of what was quite a lengthy trading range, helping to correct its overextension, in other words, mean reversion process. And we also have seen all of the resources. Well, I'm just mentioning some of those resources markets, but doing the resources markets doing extremely well here. And the feedback loop is that the resources markets are booming because of higher prices for so many of these commodities, particularly the industrial commodities. And the Asian markets and some of the other emerging markets are booming because their economies are growing very, very rapidly. And because those economies are growing rapidly, they consume more commodities, which boosts the commodity-producing countries. And that gives the commodity-producing countries the revenue to go on and build their infrastructure or upgrade their infrastructure and projects. So you see this feedback loop that's taking place, and that's why my two favorite long-term investment themes remain emerging markets, and with my personal preference being Asia, and also Asian markets won't always do the most on the upside, but I tend to feel that they have less risk on the downside when markets do hit some speed bumps. And so resources and this emerging market theme with my emphasis on Asia, as I've said. Now, looking at the government bond markets, there's little doubt in my mind that yields are gradually on their way back up, but these markets mostly range in here in what look like big base formation developments on the yield charts. But the bias is upwards, and I think that I know we've heard a lot of talk over the last few years about how Asian governments will be keeping bond yields low because they'll be pumping so much money back into that sector. Well, we have certainly seen a lot of that, but I don't assume that that's going to go on in perpetuity. We've heard a lot of talk about aging baby boomers and needing income and how they will keep long-dated government bond yields down low. We had heard earlier on about how we had a disinflationary, deflationary environment, and therefore yields were going to stay low for that reason. And to me, this sounds like, sounds to me like subjective talk on the part of bondholders. And the fact that bonds had done so well from that period of about the mid-80s right on up until 2003, the midpoint of 2003, has certainly conditioned people to be bullish. But the charts show that secular bull market ended back in June 2003, as I've mentioned on many, many occasions, and bond yields are in this base formation development, indicating that they will go higher over the long term, and that, in other words, bond prices are going to come down. So I think the sector is, at best, we could say that those moves will be delayed further, and that's quite a likely prospect. I don't expect explosive moves upwards in the long-dated government bonds in the short term, but if one's long these long-dated government bonds, I think we're almost certainly on the wrong side of the trend. The only way I can envisage a really good rally will be as and when stock markets get another medium-term correction or worse, and then all of those long-dated government bond markets will rally, and that will set up another short-selling opportunity. In terms of currencies, we have two weak currencies. It's the U.S. dollar and the Japanese yen. I don't see that changing. The Japanese will want to keep the yen weak, and a government can very easily keep its currency weak if it wishes to, just print more of it and keep the interest rates low. And while Japan has edged its interest rates higher this year, interest rates in most other countries have gone up a good deal more. So that helps to keep the yen weak, and that's just what they want. They don't want to repeat the Ndaka strong yen period of the 1990s. The U.S. needs a weaker U.S. dollar. That is helping to support Wall Street. It's helping to support the earnings of the U.S. multinational companies. That helps the economy a bit, albeit that Americans find that their purchasing power continues to erode. So this is sort of a stealth devaluation, and sometimes not so stealthily, that we're actually seeing in the marketplaces. And these two currencies, I think, are going to remain among the weakest over the medium term. I've never looked for a dollar collapse. Recently, we've seen a small dollar technical rally. I don't think it can do a great deal on the upside. Everybody knows that the Fed isn't going to raise interest rates anytime soon. However, rates are likely to go up again in Euroland, likely to go up again in the UK. So the US is losing what interest rate different favorable interest rate differential it had. And also, a great many people feel that the next move on US interest rates will be a cut. I'm marginally leaning towards that. It's either going to be a cut or no change in policy. I have said since last autumn and all year long that the Fed would like to keep interest rates on hold for as long as it possibly can, as long as Wall Street is rallying and the long-dated government bond yields aren't surging. The Fed will keep interest rates on hold. If the stock market starts to weaken significantly, and there's no sign of that at the moment, but if that happens over the next few months at any stage for whatever reason, I think that would increase considerably the prospects of a U.S. interest rate cut. My hunch is, though, that Bernanke won't do anything, as I've said, while the bond market is reasonably quiet, and particularly while Wall Street remains firm, as it certainly is at the moment. But the long-term outlook, as I say, is for a secular bear market in government bonds, which would mean rising yields over the long term. And never in a linear fashion, of course, but in a ranging reaction type of pattern overall. As far as the industrial metals are concerned, well, there are a few gravity-defying trends overall, but look at the backwardations that predominate. There is a shortage of available material. The mining companies have been extremely conservative in terms of their development projects, and where they have been aggressive in their development projects, the delay time in bringing all this new supply on stream is considerable. And meanwhile, this remains a classic supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. The metals have gone up an awful lot. The mining shares have lagged, even though many of them have had extremely good performances, including some solid gains this year that for the most part lead their respective indices, major overall market indices, that is. So I think this remains an exceptionally attractive sector. Very low valuations, quite reasonable chart patterns overall. And I think that this infrastructure demand, it was interesting, we were talking about this today during the seminar, and we had people from 18 different countries, although I limit the delegates to 50 to maintain the workshop environment. They came from 18 different countries, and a lot of these people are very savvy, naturally, and travel all over the world, and we had some very interesting comments about the infrastructure development programs. We know all about China doing that. We know all about India's needs for infrastructure. We know all about the Dubai situation. But one traveler talking about in parts of Turkey, huge infrastructure development programs. This is happening pretty well all over the globe. anywhere where the economies are booming, and we still have a global economy that's synchronized in a period of economic expansion, and that is always bullish for industrial resources. It's just that there are so many more countries that are involved now, as they have got their capital, their capitalism act together, that is, over the last decade or more. So I see this commodity cycle lasting for a very, very long time, minimum another decade. It could easily last a good deal longer. And what else to mention here? The agricultural commodities, I think that they are so, some of them are so depressed in historical terms, if not on a nominal basis, certainly on an inflation-adjusted basis. With the global economy synchronized in this period of GDP expansion, demand will be rising for those commodities, and we may well run into some supply and elasticity problems. But if we do, it's likely to be, well, it will be primarily due to adverse weather conditions. We will see that certainly for some crops, which will cause spikes, but we don't have that same sort of shortage situation, at least not yet, for many agricultural commodities the way we see it with the metals. I think it's an interesting sector. Bit difficult to trade, or I'm finding it difficult to trade in here. But I think if you pick up some of these agricultural commodities when they are depressed or when they've experienced a shakeout, they can be rewarding, and you're positioned long in case any supply disruptions do actually occur. Haven't mentioned oil. We had that big surge yesterday, which I did mention last night. Now, prices have slipped here a little bit today. Well, unchanged actually, on the NYMEX crude, 64.87. That's steady overall. It is still within a ranging problem pattern. The Brent broke above 70 yesterday. That's been firmer for quite some time. It eased back a little bit today, but that was an upside breakout. And I maintain that oil is in this ranging, overall ranging, but bullish phase, gradually moving up. And this is, of course, oil is also part of the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. So we will see further upward pressure on commodity prices, or I'll put it this way, we will see more upward pressure than downward pressure on commodity prices, and that won't change until the next global recession. And the next global recession, as far as this analyst is concerned, is not yet in sight. And I think that's pretty much it. Except I want to thank again all those subscribers who came along to the chart seminar and contributed so much. Wonderful to meet you. Wonderful to see or to see you again. I had a lot of old contacts, old friends come back on this seminar. What they contributed was awesome, and I never cease to be impressed by the depth of wisdom and knowledge and insights that we get from the Fuller Money Collective. And that's what makes this job not a job for me, but a labor of love. And have a great weekend. I'm going to have a big rest. All the best to all of you.